Good afternoon, Bay Area. Welcome to the Sights and Sound Show with Janae Darden, where every week we tap into the Bay Area art scene and bring you rich conversations with artists. On today's show, we're going on a field trip to a bookstore for my interview with artists Awan Matt and Nancy Cato. We'll chat about how they celebrate Black men and boys in their illustrations. Today's show is about imagination. That's all coming up. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Sights and Sound Show with Janae Darden. One of the many things I love about our show is that we're not just in the studio. We bring conversations to live audiences too. Back in 2024, I interviewed two local Black visual artists. Nancy Cato turned a Bayview mural she created into the book, Jamari's Journey. It's about a Black boy who escapes the oppression in his life through a magical portal. And Awan Mance's book, What Do Brothers Do All Day, celebrates Black men through illustrations of them in everyday life. I spoke with Nancy and Awan at Books, Inc. in Alameda. Welcome to Books, Inc. in Alameda. I'm Janae Darden, host of KALW Sights and Sounds, where I cover arts for the station, which you can find on 91.7 FM on your dial, or visit KALW.org. And I'm so excited to be with these brilliant, beautiful artists tonight. I'm going to just read a quick bio for both of them. Awan Matz is a visual artist, author, editor, and professor of English art at what school now? At Northeastern University, Oakland campus, formerly Mills College. And she was inspired by Richard Scarry's, I pronounce his last name, What Do People Do All Day? And so she created a groundbreaking series called 1001 Black Men, which is a collection of portraits produced over 6.5 years that have evolved into this book. And her new book is What Do Brothers Do All Day? So that's what we're going to talk about. Nancy Cato, hello, was born and raised in New Haven, Connecticut, and has been creating socially conscious illustrations for the past 12 years. And in 2000, she started her own company. I read she left her job and started her own company, Cato Creations. I love it. And she designs T-shirts and greeting cards and logos for local businesses. And she's a member of the 3.9 Art Collective, which highlights the work and presence of African-American artists in San Francisco. And she's done a lot of work in the Bayview and worked with youth. She works with youth in the Bayview, too. And we're going to talk about this mural, Jamari's Journey, that's now a book that was in the Bayview. So that's what we're talking about. Those are some of the things we're talking about today. But this is going to be, I think, a great conversation on Black joy and imagination and just all kind of yummy good stuff. So welcome, everybody. Welcome, Awan and Nancy. I want to start, Nancy, with you. I was digging up some stuff about you, looking you up. And I want to ask this question to both of you. But can you talk about how you mentioned that when you first started off as an artist, you noticed you weren't drawing Black people? And that was a challenge for you and a process. Can both of you talk about just how you grew to be passionate about covering and illustrating Black people? So I'm gonna pass the mic to Nancy.
Okay, so it's funny because with my artwork, my Uncle Donnie was also an artist, and I had his art book, and all of his art books were full of white people. So that was my first introduction, was copying his work. But then even when I got into drawing my own artwork, it's true, like through hip hop and everything, most of my characters looked either white or Latino. So it took a while, and I think it came from over time actually looking at myself and identifying with myself before I could actually start, like, you know what I mean? Like drawing me. But I also had a photographer, a teacher of mine who asked me why I was drawing white people. And he was white. And I was just like, what are you talking about? I mean, you know what I mean? And I started looking at all my art and none of them were Black people. So it changed, but I had to really, it's amazing. I had to actually really look at myself and start to observe my surroundings before I could actually do that. And I actually see kids doing the same thing in the schools. So it's not just me. Like it's a thing. You know what I mean? So, yeah. That answers my
question. I think that someone asked me the same question just a couple of days ago. So I've been thinking about this, and I think I know one of the first drawings of a person that I can remember doing was myself, and I made myself brown, and I think I was about 5. And so I think I drew, I was really influenced by artists like Norman Rockwell a lot, but I was trying to draw some of those same small town quaint scenarios, but with Black people. But I was also trying to draw a diversity of people. And so I think part of it is, you know, my family, I was born in Florida, my family's from the South, and it's a very large family. My dad was 1 of 8. And so I think a lot of the most salient people I saw were Black people. I also remember sitting with my friends in elementary school, and we would draw NFL players from the 70s. And we would draw only the Black ones. And so I think that, and of course, I was in the New York area, you know, the big afros, the, you know, the style, the platforms, a lot of that was around Black people. So those are some of the folks we really wanted to draw. And so I think I definitely remember drawing Black people, but I also remember drawing a diversity of people, you know, trying to emulate some of the folks who Robert McCloskey would draw, for example, you know, who did Make Way for Ducklings. But the Black image was really important to me because the 70s was such a time for Black representation, Black power, and Black aesthetics. And so I hope that's an answer.
You all give good answers. You don't have to question. We know you know what you're talking about. So you talk about like the Black, you know, arts movement in the 70s. And this question also to both of you, what were your influences as far as Black artists?
I would have to say children's books, people who were doing children's books at that time. Ezra Jack Keats is not Black, but, you know, Whistle for Willie, The Snowy Day, Peter's Chair, those beautiful, iconic children's books that had Black urban main characters. I was also influenced by some people like I wish I could remember the names of the authors, but it's a beautiful A to Z of African tribes called Ashanti to Zulu. And so those kinds of books were really, really compelling to me. We spent a lot of time when I was a kid at the children's library, and all of that was important, but also a lot of photographs, looking through Black history books and seeing some of the photographs, you know, Gordon Parks and, you know, some of the great Harlem Renaissance photographers. I was really into kind of history because I was a big nerd. And so, you know, photographers were really, really important to me.
Okay, I didn't know Ezra wasn't Black. I didn't know that. Okay. See, that's why I said, you all know what you're talking about. Wow, so he wasn't Black. Because I have a lot of his books, and I grew up on his books. All right. Let me pass the mic to Nancy.
I didn't grow up with a lot of artwork. I think hip-hop during that time was probably really, really big, and I was really tied into graffiti. And, like, during that time, you were either, like, a writer or someone that did characters, or you did both. And so my thing was characters, and so that's kind of what I got tied up into. A lot of people compare my artwork, though, to Fat Albert Gang. And I did watch that, but I don't think I knew how much it affected me because my work, it gets attributed to that a lot. So on some level, I think that, yeah, probably. Yeah.
I definitely saw Fat Albert in your work. So I love y'all watch Fat Albert growing up. Yeah. Hey. Yeah, I love. Yeah. It's funny you mentioned Fat Albert because I was just like a couple of weeks ago looking up Fat Albert on YouTube because I just miss. Yeah. Just that cartoon and that animation. So, again, the books are What Do Brothers Do All Day by Awan Smets and Jamari's Journey by Nancy Cato. Both of these books center on Black men and boys. And I wanted to know, well, let me backtrack. you know, and a lot of times when we look at works centering on Black men and Black boys, it's not always positive. Not even just works, just the narrative of Black men and Black boys is not often positive. And so we see, Awan, we see in your book just Black boys and men of all ages just doing their thing, just living their life, just being human, right? And Jamari's journey, we just see this little boy with just an imagination and an innocence. And we don't see that with Black men and Black boys either enough in mainstream media. So talk about your inspirations behind why you wanted these stories, these illustrations, this art to be about Black boys, Black men. Who wants to go first? Nancy?
Well, I have a 12-year-old, and I think during this time where we're discussing like Black girl magic and the Black queen and things of that nature, my son wanted to know where the Black boy magic was. And so that was kind of hard because it's like, man, the history, like, you know, so got to kind of bring him up to date. But I wanted him to see a reflection of himself and his magic, because he's very, very magical in the way he sees the world and creates and everything. And what I realized in the Bayview, you don't really get, because these were in the Bayview, they were 5 feet by 10 feet. It was a mural, my first Arts Commission mural. And, the Bayview, and so you don't get a chance to actually see young boys like discovering something outside of their own community in an innocent way, and so I wanted to do that, and just in case a Black child in general walked by the murals, they could actually see themselves. But I think the icing on the cake would be if a Black boy saw himself in space, then that would be like even better.
I think my book grew out of my portrait series of 1001 Black Men, and I started the series simply because I felt like there was a conversation about objectification of that wasn't happening. And I was really thinking about the degree to which Black men and boys' images are used to sell a whole bunch of things, ideas, products, ideas, fear, for example, that don't at all benefit Black men and boys. And so I wanted to create some images that showed Blackness, and particularly Black men and masculinity, the way that I see it. And so I wanted to change the visibility and just draw people as I saw them without wanting them to be anything that they're not. I was thinking about the role of the Black artist, and one of the things I thought was, I was just thinking about that recently, that the role is to portray our communities in all of their diversity, with love and without judgment. And so when I was drawing the images of Black boys and men for What Do Brothers Do All Day, I wanted to make sure to show a lot of different ways of being Black and really stay away from the notion that there is a right way, there's a good representation and a bad representation. There's all kinds of things, and it's all good. Yeah.
When brothers, young brothers, little brothers, older brothers, brothers of all ages, when they see your pieces, and they see your work, what's the reaction that makes you smile?
I think the first thing that comes to mind is I did, it's a piece that I have, and it's called Brothers Gonna Work It Out. And it's a picture of two brothers pointing guns at each other, but they have angels, Black brothers, pulling them, trying to pull them apart. And I think a brother saw my artwork on the wall, and he looked at me, he looked at the work, and he looked back at me, and he looked at the work, and he said, "You did that?" And I said, "Yeah, I did that." And he goes, "You get it." So I that is a responsibility, but it touched me because I was like, okay, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. You know what I mean? Because that's when I sit down to draw, I don't always say I'm trying to reach a certain group of people, but I know I walk with my people in my artwork, and whatever comes through me comes through me. And I think that was worrying and concerning for me at that moment, and he felt it. So I think that was that's the first thing to stand out, that story.
What Nancy said. That's like exactly. You know, I do, you know, as this grew out of my 1001 portraits, the more I've drawn Black men, the more accountability I felt towards my subject. You know, at first I started thinking, oh, I'm great at this. I'm unbiased. No one could do this better than I could. I'm, you know, the world is lucky to have me. But, you know, the more I drew, I started thinking more when I started showing the images, I realized that I really cared about Black men looking and say and seeing something that looks familiar and someone who cares and, you know, just loves Black people. And so it has meant a lot to me when I've with this book to hear, but also with some of my other drawings of African-American and Afro-diasporic men to see Black men say, hey, that looks just like my cousin. You know, that's how I looked when I was young, you know, and that's really because it means so much to me. I understand what it is like to not see yourself reflected back in the media. And so I just, that's the highest compliment to me when a Black man or boy says, oh, I feel seen, that, or some permutation of that. Yeah.
Juan is so humble. No, both of what you, you know, both of you said some very beautiful things, and I can see why people will react and brothers will react that way when they see your work. I think you've kind of touched upon this, Nancy, but and this is also to the both of you. Do you ever feel like ancestral energy when you create? Do the ancestors, your ancestors, do they inspire your work? Do they inform your work? Either you can go. You want to, Awan?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, in my other life, I'm a literary historian of African-American literature before the Harlem Renaissance. So I study a lot of people's ancestors. But in particular, I think of even the ancestors whose names I know, but who lived 200 years ago. So there are no photos. I think of these people all the time. And I feel gratitude that whenever I sit down to draw or paint or add color, I think I can do this because these people survived and created a pathway that, you know, in 1865, people on both sides of my family were able to hit the ground running so that they could establish moving towards the life that I have now. So I always feel gratitude. And I feel a presence. I was lucky enough to have one of my great grandparents lived until I was in high school, until I was a senior in high school. So just thinking about those people makes their parents and their grandparents feel more real to me. And I feel so much gratitude, but I also feel a sense of responsibility that, you know, because I wonder all the time, I wonder what they would think of my work. I wonder what they would think of what's happening now. I hope this is doing them proud. I hope this is doing them justice for what they survived for us. Yeah.
I would have to say my ancestors, Black music, probably, because I listened to a lot of music. I grew up in a home with a lot of music, mostly like Ella Fitzgerald and Billie Holiday, Sarah Vaughan, and like Earth, Wind & Fire. Each of my brothers and sisters, we all had different takes on music. You know, I was Prince and Michael Jackson, and there was like the big bands like Earth, Wind & Fire, Marvin Gaye. So I think a lot of ancestors along the lines of music, I can feel when I'm drawn. And then sometimes, and I don't know if this has happened to you, Juan, sometimes when I do a drawing, I almost forget. Like, I don't even know how I arrived at the end of the drawing. You know what I mean? So I would have to say, yeah, I don't know who's taking over. But that has happened.
I have a picture of Toni Morrison on my wall. So when I get frustrated, I look at her sometimes. Or just being a Black journalist, if I get frustrated, like if I'm working with an editor or something that maybe doesn't understand, and like I feel like she gives me this look. I feel like the looks change. Like, come on now, like, you know, you can do this. You know, I'm like, Tony, what should I do? And I have James Baldwin too, and he always give a side eye. He always give a side like, ain't nothing changed since I was here. I was like, no. You mentioned, while I was teasing you about being humble, and I was thinking about Niecy Nash, who recently won an Emmy. And remember how she congratulated herself, you know, and I was, you know, watching, she was backstage being interviewed by journalists, and they were talking about how, you know, people in marginalized communities, sometimes we're not encouraged to congratulate ourselves and be proud of ourselves. And I'm thinking of both of you who are, again, brilliant, talented artists. How does your identities inform your work, you know, because, you know, being women, being gay, being poor, being rich, all of that stuff, and, you know, being Black, being from the East Coast, being from the South, you know, how do those, all of those identities, or ones I didn't mention, do you think inform your work?
No. No, you know, it's funny. The only identity that comes to mind for me is Black. So, that's kind of where I come from. It could be Black lesbian, Black person, Black sister, Black mother, but Black is first. So that's all that informs my work is Black. Whatever's is Black. So and I know when I sit down, matter of fact, Toni Morrison allowed me to be able to say that. When, you know, she said it. You know, when she writes. She writes for Black people. Anybody else who gets it, hey, that's fine too. But we could tell stories. We have so many stories to tell about us. So I'm trying to dive deep into that and what that means for the next person that comes through who can also piggyback on perhaps what I have done. You know what I mean? So yeah, I guess that would be.
Yeah, I would say just about. You know, all of my identities are overdetermined by my experience as a Black person. And when you mentioned Toni Morrison, you know, I always think about the book Song of Solomon, which can't give any spoilers, but I will say that when I closed that book, I am very proud to be Black. I had a deep connection with Black family and ancestry and community, but I closed that book and I realized that Blackness was bigger and there was more possibility than I ever imagined. It just was emancipating to my imagination. I didn't feel anchored to notions of what I've been taught is real and what's not. You know, I felt so free to, you know, explore ancestral ways of knowing. And so all of those things really influence my work. And Black history also is so important to me. And so I think that, but in terms of other identities, I would say being a Black nerd is really instrumental. You know, it means a lot. It informs everything I do. And I find that a lot of my work involves research. So I want to geek out and then I want to draw. Yeah.
You both are speaking to my soul because you mentioned being a Black nerd. And I'm like, yes, because I dreamt of doing things like this, watching C-SPAN books when I was younger. And I was telling Jared, I was like, this is like my C-SPAN books fantasy coming to life. And then just hip hop, like the influence of hip hop. Toni Morrison's Song of Solomon, that's my favorite book, I think, of hers, the Song of Solomon. And we're laughing. And because your books, too, you both bring us joy. Your work brings us joy. I love to hear about the importance of joy in what you do. Not just what comes out on the page or on the canvas, but just in what you do. Like, how do you, because being an artist is not easy. It's funny because I was on Instagram and I had posted a comment on one of the actors from Insecure was just mentioning about the strike, you know, the strike that was last year. And I was saying how sometimes people think art is just something easy and that artists don't deserve to get paid well. And I was like, artists saved us during the COVID pandemic because books and movies and music and murals saved a lot of people. And I'm thinking just as an artist, like when you hit bumps, the importance of having joy, of still making space for joy as a creative and again, what comes out on the page. So talk about joy, Black joy, Nancy Joy, Juan Joy, Joy Joy. Oh, who wants to go? Why? Okay. Nancy's like, her.
You know, there's a, you know, I always think about my favorite poet, and is also African-American woman, Lucille Clifton. And I can never specifically remember the quote, but essentially what she said was, being Black for her feels like a gift every day. And so I take a lot of joy from that. And I just, you know, art has been such an integral part of my life for my whole life. I did training, you know, I was in college, 4 years undergrad, 5 years of grad school to become an English professor. And I've done that for almost 30 years. But the art has been what I've been an artist before, during, and always. Once that is, you know, done, if I retire, I'll still be an artist. And so it feels joyful to me that every day, somehow, in a place that marginalizes Black community and Black creativity, I've been able to carve out a space to be able to do this thing, which helps me to connect with myself and with my community in such a profound way. So there's a lot of joy that comes from art. And then, you know, Black is beautiful is one of my favorite phrases. And just looking at all of the aesthetic innovations of Black people, music, visual art. And the more I learn, the more I see, and it's so much broader. That just gives me so much pleasure. And I feel like it's an honor to be among the folks who are engaged in that practice. So that just, you know, every time I put pen to paper, I feel happy to do that.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think when I sit down to draw, it's almost like you're about to dive into like a nice meal. You know what I mean? Only I'm in charge of making it. You know what I mean? So the whole process of drawing and sketching, and just moving lines around until they come together and they work together and they form something that you had no idea it was gonna come out. Like that, like, oh, I wasn't even thinking about that, but okay, I'll go with that. So I think so sometimes, because I told you I'm listening to music, like it might be house music, it might be Marvin Gaye, whatever, I'll get up and dance, like, because it's like, this is something else, like, this is something else. And even if you're like, I see a child is here, even if you're sketching and it's not coming out right, you still got to do that dance to get it right, you know what I mean, to get it like you need it to be. You might have to do a little something. So that whole process of drawing and sketching and trying to drum up something that's going to be interesting to me, first of all. Now, you take that sketch, you ink it in, and then you go out in the world and you show other people, and they like it too? That's a whole nother thing. That's like a whole nother thing. That's a whole nother level you get to dance to. You know what I'm saying? And then they're talking to their friends. And so that whole process is beautiful. That whole process.
Yeah, I know about when you get writer's block. and I'm like, we do something at KLW. We'll have a dance party. Like, it's funny, when I first started working there and everybody just broke out in dance and somebody brought a speaker. And I was like, what is going on? Yeah, my mother was like, I would have ran out of there if I saw that. But I was like, I'm going to dance with them. Yeah, something about that music. I mean, just even using other forms of art to inspire your artistry, it does make a difference. So both of you, I can't, like I said, my stick figures do not inspire people the way your work does. But you all have an amazing imagination. Your imaginations are just incredible. And we're so lucky that we get to see what you imagine in these books. And I was thinking about your book, particular Nancy, because Jamari is wanting to escape just some of the hardship through a portal, And, you know, I know portals are really significant in a lot of works by Black artists. And can you talk about, both of you, the power of imagination in artistry, especially for marginalized people, especially for Black people? I'm thinking of, we don't want to I'm thinking of Song of Solomon, you know, but and how that book ended. But yeah, just the importance of imagination. Who wants to go first? Nancy.
I think because of the reality that we live in, I think imagining something different for us is very important. But I mean, I grew up in a community. I was a tomboy. And I was a tomboy, I don't know, because I was attracted to the boys, but they were doing stuff, you know, climbing trees, jumping off of roofs. Like, they were doing stuff. Like, they were moving their bodies, you know what I mean? And there was also imagination. You know, we imagined all kinds of things, you know what I mean? And I remember one time we imagined that, you know, we could take grapes and freeze them and we would have wine later on. And it was like, I'm gonna have wine. It's like, you got a popsicle. I don't know what we was doing. It's like, you spent most of our time trying to get high, and now kids like, you got it dialed in. Oh, anyway. But yeah, I think the imagination is really, really important. And taking the time to actually find your imagination, because I think a lot of times when we're kids, we have that imagination, but it gets we grow up and we lose the imagination, you know. But you still have to imagine how you're gonna pay your bills, you know what I mean? So it's, you still need imagination. But I mean, you know, and as artists, we do a little extra with it. So yeah.
You know, imagination is—it's interesting to think about it, because I remember the first time I went to San Diego Comic-Con, I saw hundreds of Black people doing cosplay. I mean, there are thousands of people, Black people there. It's an incredibly diverse experience, but all these—I mean, there was something so beautiful and wonderful about Black cosplayers, because these were folks who were giving themselves permission to just play and imagine and pretend, and were adults. And Black Luke Skywalker, all right, you know? And so I feel like imagination is this powerful tool in a society that sometimes hands us a lot of really serious stuff. Like, you don't know if someone's going to think you're stealing, and then what happens then? You know, any moment can become incendiary. But also, one of the great things about imagination is, you know, and I'm going to try not to sound like an English professor, but I will say the traditional ways of understanding our society don't leave room for our histories and our culture and the way that we create meaning. And so imagination is this tool. I won't say it's a weapon, but it's definitely a tool that we can use to kind of crack things open and let our truth and our reality out. And so, you know, I've been doing a lot of research on Black mermaids recently, who date back 100, 200,000 years, and just love now playing with that and, you know, drawing. I'm just taking my time drawing these Black mermaids, you know, rooted in research, but also I get to just imagine, what does that need to look like for me to really open up the possibility of Black fairy tale, which is real, but seems like unreal to so many. So imagination is a superpower, I think.
And I'm so happy to live in this age where we see Black fairy tales and Black mermaids and Black Panther, you know, and Wakanda. And I'm really watching like Star Trek Discovery, and I'm just in love with that show. And I've talked about this a number of times on KLW, just to see Black people on an adventure, you know, and it's not like tied to racism and trying to run away from slavery. It's just like, you know, just meeting, you know, interacting with different aliens or species, going through a portal, floating through space, you know, living in a country that hasn't been colonized. And look what happened to a Black imagination when you're in a country that has not been colonized, right? Like, I just love that we're living in this age, and that so many artists from the Bay Area, you know, are part of that. And I interviewed an author. I can't remember her name. Her first name was Maya. I don't know if she, I can give you the link, but I interviewed her. She wrote a book on, a little children's book on Black mermaids, and she's based here in the Bay Area too as well. So, And the images were gorgeous. You touched on something, Nancy. And that was funny about imagine how to pay your bills. So it's cold, so call PG&E and say, I'm just gonna imagine I'm gonna pay you. Right, manifest. Manifest that PG&E balance to zero. Before we go into Q&A, I just want to ask one more question and something, Nancy, that you mentioned. And we talked about this too yesterday, but about how do we as adults maintain our connection to magic? You know, you mentioned Black boy magic, and of course we hear Black girl magic, but how do we, like you said, how do we maintain that connection to magic and always carry that magic with us in a world where the PG&E bills are high and it's just all kind of chaos going on. And I'm thinking to Anissi Nash when she had to congratulate her own self, right? That was kind of her magic right there.
I think staying connected to nature is really important because, you know, when you're out there, the ocean or in the woods, if you're quiet and you can listen, you know, could hear the ancestors, you can connect with yourself. And so that, I think that in and of itself could create magic inside you, you know, but I think that our lives have been reduced to, you know, go to work, come home, cook dinner, raise the kids, go to bed, you know, so you're on this steady path that doesn't include nature in any kind of way. But I think that alone and just doing things that people think are corny, like talking to your trees and talking to your plants and touching them. And that's a real thing. You know what I mean? That's part of our lineage is doing those kinds of things. And I think that nature will talk back to you through those kinds of connections, in nature.
I am a big nerd, so I'll talk about being indoorsy. And just reading and studying, kind of immersing myself in the past feels magical in some ways because it almost feels like time travel. You know, I remember working on a book that was in my scholar hat on, and I was in the 19th century for months. And when I finished, I felt like I'd been somewhere else and looked around through the eyes of Black people 150 years ago and had the experience of their lives. And it just gave me a different sense of context. It gave me a sense of my smallness relative to this kind of historical landscape and, you know, our trajectory and, you know, just reminding myself of, having those experiences, nature for sure. For me, also going into museums, and I walked into a room once at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and I grew up going there a lot because I grew up on Long Island, and I walked into one of the rooms I'd been going into for decades, and it was now all dedicated to Black people's experience, art of Black people's experience after slavery ended. And it just hit me in this such a profound way, just being in touch with how we have made meaning over time and found joy over time. That feels magical to me because it is, especially in a place like the United States, it is conjuring that you can make beauty and joy. And there's so much to learn from that ancestral presence for me.
Thank you both for those beautiful answers. I'm going to open it up for questions. We have a few minutes for questions. Does anyone have questions for these artists, authors? Yes.
Okay.
So the question is, what's your processes for Yeah, your creativity. Thank you.
For this type of book, the art comes first for me. Just coming up with images that I want to see that tell a story. And then adding words that help clarify the story that's up here so that people who are looking at the pictures also see the story that I'm trying to thread together with the images. So the art comes first and then the writing comes afterwards.
Something I learned in my process is that dreaming, sleeping, like taking a nap and imagining what you're imagining is much faster than a computer. Like there's nothing like your mental capacity to create. So a lot of times I take a nap, I'll sleep or something like that, and imagine whatever character I'm creating doing whatever I want them. I can make them do anything in my mind, right? Then after that, I do some sketches referring back to whatever dreaming I had. And then a lot of reference. I know you know a lot of reference material in regards to whatever I'm referencing. And then just a lot of sketching and music. Yeah, I would have to say. And then just repeat. Go back to sleep. Drink some more. Yeah, I would have to say that. Yeah.
I remember I used to daydream a lot when I was a kid, and that makes a difference too. I'm just speaking as a writer, just daydreaming sometimes. Yeah, I believe that. Yeah. Other questions? Okay. Oh, here.
That resounded with me is, you know, as we hear, I'm going to say Oakland. Okay. The work that I do is based out of Oakland. And today I was on a panel in PR and, you know, just thinking about the conversation of how these different groups and allies came together in, you know, the fight and the struggle of looking at, you know, the lack of resources for our communities in Oakland, and specifically being in conversation around the needs of our Black children in Oakland. Like, just the basics, you know, mental health services. And so quality education, what does safety look like for our Black children in Oakland? And so when the both of you spoke to, no, you spoke to Black boys not being seen, right? And so I think about how, as I'm doing my work going into East Oakland and West Oakland, there's no images, right? There's no images of young Black boys on a billboard or, you know, anywhere. You know, they don't get to reflect and see themselves in the communities that they live in. You know, in the school district, like, there's scraps and pieces of what's considered arts and culture, but most of it has been removed. So, yeah, that's what I wanted to speak to, like, that image of... how I see, how I know our Black boys don't feel seen, don't feel heard, which then leads to, you know, that demonizing and criminalization of our Black boys, which they don't deserve.
Thank you for that comment. And I don't want to follow up with a question, because you both, you know, have worked with different organizations. And you, Nancy, you had a mural in the Bayview. How can we get people like you to have, you know, your works in East Oakland, in West Oakland, so that we're reflected, so that children, Black boys and Black girls, can see themselves?
Well, I'm glad I'm needed. That's what I'd have to say. I don't know how. I mean, I could ask and inquire. We could work together and see if there's something we could do. Because I'm that's what I wanted to do. You know what I'm saying? And so I would be happy to. I would be happy. I'm still, my mural game is up and coming. You understand? So I'm down. I'm surprised, honestly, because you guys have a lot of muralists in the East Bay. So I'm really surprised. And yeah, let's see what we can do about it. I'm down.
You know, and I just, my book has been out now for about 8 weeks now, 7 or 8 weeks. And so I'm really strategizing some ways to get it into spaces where Black boys go, like barbershops and other places where, you know, kids will be, particularly, you know, kids with adults and maybe have little conversations. Because that, I think about that, it sounds bizarre, but I get up in the morning wondering, okay, so people who might not go to the bookstore, where, how do we get these books into their hands? And how do we get them exposed to other self-representation, other Black folks saying, this is what community looks like from my lens. More of those artists and writers getting our work out there so that kids can see that other people see what they do.
I know when I had interviewed the Oakland Youth Poet Laureate, and she spoke about the need for more diverse books, even in Oakland, as diverse as Oakland is, the need for more diverse books in Oakland schools. So thank you for bringing that up. Yeah. And Alameda schools. And someone made the comment that we need books in not just Oakland, diverse books, not just in Oakland schools, especially like what's happening in the country right now. And someone in the back mentioned having them in Alameda schools. So, well, the books are for sale here at Books, Inc. What Do Brothers Do All Day by Awan Metz and Jamari's Journey by Nancy Cato. So buy a book, maybe donate it to a school, contact the schools, contact the libraries, you know, let them know that these works are out. And to support local artists, because sometimes we support the big names and we got big talent right here, you know, right here in the Bay Area. And we're going to wrap up. They're going to sign books too as well if you purchase one. But any last thoughts?
If anybody, you know, if you want me in the schools, like I said, I'm still learning about how to become more seen in what I do with the schools. Like, I teach cartooning at the senior center in San Francisco, the seniors, and I would love to do that with the kids. You know what I mean? Because I know that they would appreciate it. And I didn't have it when I was a kid. So I would love to offer that. So that's, yeah.
You know, and I love interacting with kids and other folks, you know, who, you know, I love when these images make people, you know, go to the folks who really need to see them. But I also want to encourage people to draw, also to draw what they see. You know, how we see is always legitimate. It's our, and we need a diversity of representations. Even if you're focused on Black representation, many different Black people writing about or drawing or singing about what Blackness looks like from their perspective. More perspectives, more diversity, for sure.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Awan and Nancy, for being here tonight and sharing your work. Thank you to Books, Inc. Thank you to KLW. Thank you to everybody who came out tonight. Make sure you get a copy of these books, network, get people's numbers, email, you know, so we can bring these kind of books more into our schools and our other public spaces. So thank you so much, everybody. Thank you. And thank you to Jerry, too. Thank you to Jerry for putting this together as well. That was my 2024 conversation with artists Nancy Cato and Awan Metz. Nancy's book is Jamari's Journey, and Awan's is What Do Brothers Do All Day? We'll have links on KALW Sights and Sound webpage with more information about these artists and their work. Thank you to Books, Inc. and Alameda, especially Jerry Thompson, who is the store's events coordinator. Also, thanks to KALW engineers James Rollins and Gonady Joe Johnson. Go to KALW.org's event page to find out about the station's upcoming live events. And that's all the time we have for the Sights and Sounds show with Jhené Darden. Thank you to our show producer, Porfirio Rangel, our board operator, Damian Miner, and our director of audio programming, David Boyer. And thank you for tuning in. For you Prince fans listening, tomorrow, Thursday, I'll be part of a poetry reading honoring the late singer. So join us at Pegasus Books in downtown Berkeley at 7 p.m. This event is part of the Berkeley Poetry Festival. And this weekend, make sure to check out Oakland Carnival this Saturday, June 7th at Mosswood Park. Also, for some music, Bay Area artists are really, really shining on NPR's Tiny Desk. Shout out to the latest Tiny Desk winner, Ruby Ibarra. And E40's Tiny Desk performance just dropped. And I saw some previous Sights and Sounds guests like Kev Choice and Martin Luther performing with E40 along with other Bay Area artists. And you can watch that all on YouTube. Very, very, very just really awesome Bay Area talent. So yeah, we'll have another great show for you right here next Wednesday at 4 p.m. Please go tell a friend, tell a family member to tune in and listen to us as well. Treat yourself to some joy. Take a break from just kind of the chaos, all the chaos happening in the news. But until then, be good to yourselves and each other.